and have a new agency that has oversight with human rights to enforce immigration law. We need to make sure that we get rid of qualified immunity. We need to have a new standard of force. We need to make sure that Noam is impeached. And I have a set of 10 points, and I believe that needs to be the firm ground that the Democrats hold, not an additional dime until they cede to our demands. We're in the right. We can't fold this time.
Congressman Khanna, your response to what Trump has said, he was asked in a recent interview on NBC about ICE operations in Minnesota. He said, maybe we can use a little bit of a softer touch, but you still have to be tough. Your response?
Well, I was in Minneapolis. I mean, you have ICE agents patrolling the streets and following people to church. You have them going into the bookstores. You have them going into grocery stores and restaurants, not just to immigrants or children of immigrants, but to seventh, third, and fourth generation Minnesotan families. So I don't understand what a softer touch looks like. Are they going to follow people to less churches? The reality is they're violating people's constitutional rights. And until we tear down the ICE agency, until we replace the ICE agency with an agency that is under the Justice Department that follows human rights and constitutional rights, we're not going to solve this. That was how we enforced immigration law from the New Deal on to George W. Bush. There is no reason that we need an agency that has no accountability to human rights and constitutional law.
So you join your fellow Congress member Ilhan Omar in calling for the abolition of ICE?
I believe it needs to be replaced. I've said, let's tear down the agency. It's not working. It's violating human rights. And let's have an immigration enforcement agency. Everyone believes that we need to enforce immigration laws, but let's have that agency be a new agency that has clear safeguards, that has clear laws about the human rights of detention, where people are being detained, and that is under the Justice Department with oversight from Congress.
Congressmember Ro Khanna, Democratic Congressmember from California, joining us from the Rotunda from Capitol Hill. Coming up, we hear the testimony of victims of Trump's militarized immigration crackdown, including Marimar Martinez, shot five times by a federal immigration agent in Chicago. Back in 20 seconds.
Don't know how fire works. It burns too slow, you'll lose it. You don't know how fire works. It dies until you feed it. You laugh at my temper, your eyes like December, so cold and blue.
Raptured by Cassie Velasa performing at the Brooklyn Folk Festival. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
We turn now to some of the powerful voices from Tuesday's hearing on Capitol Hill on U.S. citizens who've experienced violent encounters with federal immigration agents deployed in cities across the U.S. Three U.S. citizens and the brothers of Renee Good shared harrowing testimony of their experiences as congressional Democrats promised accountability. Not a single Republican lawmaker showed up to the hearing. Renee Good's brothers, Brent and Luke Ganger, both testified at the hearing, with Brent Ganger reading from his eulogy to his sister, saying Good was, quote, unapologetically hopeful. This is part of Luke's testimony at Tuesday's hearing.
My name is Luke Ganger, and I'm here with my brother, Brent. Renee Good is our sister. We're here on behalf of Nay's big family and those who loved her. We're here to ask for your help. I was talking to my four-year-old last week when she noticed I was not doing well. I had to come here today and talk to some important people. She knows that her aunt died and that somebody caused it to happen. She told me that there are no bad people and that everyone makes mistakes. She has Ney's spirit. The deep distress our family feels because of Ney's loss is in such a violent and unnecessary way is complicated by feelings of disbelief, distress, and desperation for change. In the last few weeks, our family took some consolation, thinking that perhaps Ney's death would bring about change in our country, and it has not. The completely surreal scenes taking place on the streets of Minneapolis are beyond explanation. This is not just a bad day or a rough week or isolated incidents. These encounters with federal agents are changing the community and changing many lives, including ours, forever.
That was Renee Good's brother, Luke Anger, testifying on Capitol Hill, followed by 30-year-old Marimara Martinez from Chicago. In her testimony, she described her near-fatal encounter with Border Patrol agents October 4th. She was on her way to church to drop off clothes for donation when she spotted Border Patrol vehicle in her neighborhood. She says she followed them for about 15 minutes, honking her horn, shouting La Migra to warn her neighbors. That's essentially shouting ICE. Then when she was to the left of their vehicle, an agent swerved into her lane, sideswiping her vehicle. This is some of her testimony about what happened next.
I drove forward and went around the Border Patrol agents, who jumped out of his car and pointed his gun at me. I moved to the far left lane, striking the curb on the far left side of Ketzi. The next thing I knew, I felt a burning sensation in my arms, legs, and that I had been shot by pepper balls, which I also seen these agents fire at people in our community. As I continued to drive past the Border Patrol agents, I could hear my back passenger window shatter, and I felt bullets continue to pierce my body. As I attempted to drive to a safe location, I began to feel lightheaded. I looked down, and I noticed blood gushing out of my arms and legs, and I realized I'd been shot multiple times. At the hospital, I remember seeing multiple agents standing around, watching me be treated for my wounds. My arms, legs, and chest were all wrapped in bandages. I had 7 bullet holes in my body. I remember the agents rushing the nurses to finish up so they could take me with them. The agents took me from the second hospital to the federal detention center in downtown Chicago. I had never even had a parking ticket before, and now I was sitting in federal detention center just for being the victim in a minor traffic accident. Things were surreal. The news in the jail that evening had my story and was being called a domestic terrorist. I am in significant pain as I attempt to do things I was easily able to do before October 4. I attend weekly physical therapy sessions to work on these issues and hope one day I can move in the same way I was able to move prior to October 4. I know that what happened to me in the matter of seconds on October 4 will unfortunately be with me for a lifetime. And perhaps even worse, the mental scars will always be there as a reminder of the time my own government attempted to execute me. And when they fell, they chose to vilify me. I am Renee Good. I am Alex Preddy. I am Silverio Villegas Gonzalez. I am Keith Porter. They should all be here today. I know each of them would trade my bullet wounds and lifetime of mental distress in a heartbeat to be able to be back with their loved ones this afternoon. And we must also remember the countless other souls who lost their lives at the hands of these entrusted with authority.
That's Marimar Martinez, shot by Border Patrol agent Charles Exum in Chicago on October 4th. After he shot her, the agent sent text messages bragging, quote, "I fired 5 rounds and she had 7 holes. Put that in your book, boys," he said. The charges against Martinez were dropped. The next speaker was Danielle Rascon from San Bernardino, California. He described an encounter with MAS federal immigration agents in August.
Hi, I'm Daniel Rascon, a 23-year-old U.S. citizen from SoCal. I'm the eldest of three brothers and father to a nearly three-week-old baby girl. I operate a forklift for work and currently have my CDLA license and dental assisting certification. I'm no celebrity, but I am loved by many in my community, and there are many that I love and I'm thankful for. The morning of August 16th, 2025 would quickly become unforgettable, especially because my future father-in-law, Francisco Longoria, wanted me to run an errand with him and his son, Jonathan, when all I really wanted to do was just sleep in. We took Jonathan's truck with him sitting in the passenger seat, Francisco driving, and me sitting behind Francisco when we were just 2 minutes away from home. At 8:49 a.m., two unmarked trucks suddenly boxed in our car. I had been looking down at my phone, but when our car abruptly stopped, I looked up thinking we must be at a red light or in a traffic jam. But to my surprise, I was instead met with four men in face masks, sunglasses, and baseball caps, and guns drawn, pointing straight at us, walking towards our car. These four men then tried forcing their way into our car by pulling on the handles, pounding on the windows, and yelling at us to roll down the windows, all while failing to answer our repeated requests for their identification and what they wanted. I did not know who these men were. They were refusing to identify themselves, and the only thing I felt I could do, I could control, was capturing this event by recording it on my cell phone. There were two men on either side of the car, and they were not wearing any uniform. I could not tell who these men surrounding our car with guns were. We again asked them to show identification and why they were approaching us with so much aggression. Only seconds after they started pounding on the windows, one of the men broke its driver's side window, punched Francisco in the face, and began reaching into the car. At the same time, a man on the other side of the car broke the passenger window where Jonathan was sitting and began reaching into the vehicle. They shattered the windows, and in that moment, the whole world felt like it was the size of the inside of our pickup. And we were sitting in harm's way with nothing to do but record the horrifying experience. Terrified for our lives, Francisco bravely drove straight through the only open pathway down the street, hoping to be driving towards safety, when we were instead met with gunfire. After we had passed the men, one of the four men attempted to murder us after we passed by, as he fired and made contact with the passenger side of our car multiple times. I will never forget the fear and having to quickly duck my head as the shots were fired at the car. Any one of those bullets could have killed me or two people that I love.
2 weeks later, Daniel Rascon's home was raided at 4 a.m. Agents wearing night vision goggles stormed into his house, training the lasers from their assault rifles onto everyone in Daniel's family, including his pregnant fiance. His father-in-law, Francisco, who had been driving, was then taken into custody and charged with assaulting an officer. He stayed in jail for 3 months before he was released. A federal judge later dropped the charges against him, believing he had feared for his life. Finally, we turn to the excerpt of Alia Rahman's testimony. She was violently dragged out of her car by federal immigration officers in Minneapolis this January as she was on her way to a medical appointment.
My name is Alia Rahman, and I am a resident of South Minneapolis. I'm a Bangladeshi American, born in northern Wisconsin, and I'm a disabled person with autism and a traumatic brain injury. Not all autistic brains do this, but mine fixates on sounds, numbers, and patterns. And while what the world saw happen to me exactly 3 weeks ago today on video was a terrible violation, it is still nothing compared to the horrific practices I saw inside the Whipple Center. So I am here today with a duty to the people who have not had the privilege of coming home. And I offer this data because these practices must end now. On January 13th, on the way to my 39th appointment at Hennepin County's Traumatic Brain Injury Center, I encountered a traffic jam caused by ICE vehicles and no signs indicating how to get around it. I had not wanted to pull into a blocked, chaotic intersection, but verbally agreed to do so and rolled down my window after an agent yelled, "Move! I will break your effing window!" His first instruction. Agents on all sides of my vehicle yelled conflicting threats and instructions that I could not process while watching for pedestrians. Then the glass of the passenger side window flew across my face. I yelled, "I'm disabled," at the hands grabbing at me, and an agent said, "Too late." I felt immersed in a pattern, and I thought of Genoa Donald, an autistic black man killed by police during a traffic stop in 2021. I remembered Mr. Sliberio Vigaega Gonzalez, who was killed by ICE in his vehicle last year. An agent pulled a large combat knife in front of my face, which I thought was for cutting me, and later learned was used to cut off my seatbelt. Shooting pain went through my head, neck, and wrists when I hit the ground face first and people leaned on my back. I felt the pattern, and I thought of Mr. George Floyd, who was killed four blocks away. I was carried face down through the street by my cuffed arms and legs while yelling that I had a brain injury and was disabled. I now cannot lift my arms normally. I was never asked for ID, never told I was under arrest, never read my rights, and never charged with a crime.
A part of the testimony of Alia Rahman at Tuesday's congressional hearing on President Trump's militarized crackdown on immigration. No Republican attended that hearing. We'll hear more from Alia Rahman next week on Democracy Now! On Tuesday, Vice President J.D. Vance was interviewed by the Daily Mail.
You apologized? Did you plan to apologize to the family of Alex Preti?
For what?
For, you know, labeling him an assassin with ill intent.
Well, again, I just describe to you what I said about Alex Preti, which is that he's a guy who showed up with ill intent to an ICE protest.
No, but if it's determined that his civil rights were violated by this FBI investigation, will you apologize to that?
So if this hypothetical leads to that hypothetical leads to another,
I mean, it's
hypothetical,
a real case,
will
it's
I
open.
Do a thing?
Vice President J.D. Vance. Coming up, Boston University professor Quinn Slobodian, author of the forthcoming book Muskism, A Guide for the Perplexed. Stay with us.
It burns too slow, you'll lose it. You don't know how fire works. It dies until you feed it. Come some lonely evening when these embers go leaving me bitter and cold.
Rapture by Cassie Velaza, performing at the Brooklyn Folk Festival. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
We end today's show with a look at the latest news on the world's richest man, Elon Musk. This week, French prosecutors have asked Musk to appear for questioning following a police raid on the offices of Musk's social media network, X, in Paris. The raid was part of an investigation into the distribution of child sexual abuse images. The French probe comes on the heels of two separate investigations by the UK and the European Union into Musk's AI tool Grok over sexual deepfakes. Last year, the European Union fined X the equivalent of $140 million over hate speech and misinformation. Writing on X after the raid in Paris on Tuesday, Musk said, quote, "This is a political attack."
Earlier this week, Elon Musk also announced SpaceX, his rocket and satellite business, has acquired his artificial intelligence startup, XAI. The estimated $1.25 trillion merger comes as Musk has said he wants to build a million solar-powered data centers in space. Elon Musk also shows up in the newly released Jeffrey Epstein files. In one email, he asked Epstein, quote, "What day, night will be the wildest party on your island?" unquote. He wrote that email on Christmas Day. For more on all of this, we're joined by Boston University professor of international history, Quinn Slobodian, author of the forthcoming book with Ben Tarnoff, Muskism, A Guide for the Perplexed. Let's start off, Professor Slobodian, with that raid on Musk's headquarters in Paris. Talk about what happened there, and then we'll talk about his connections to Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, the raid in Paris is the culmination of a one-year investigation that began in last January over algorithm manipulation and foreign interference, and has since expanded, as you suggested, to now seven charges ranging from CSAM to sexualized deepfakes to Holocaust denial and still this question of algorithm manipulation. And it's a part of a kind of a pushback that we're seeing now against Musk that's probably more forceful than anything we've seen to date. The Spanish prime minister similarly announced forthcoming plans to ban children on the social media platforms, including Grok and X. And not mentioned, but Malaysia and Indonesia actually blocked Grok in the late of last year and have only recently opened it up again, too. So this is all, I think, a real significant backlash to the decision, which was a business decision that Musk made in late December and early January, to encourage users on Grok to use the service to produce artificially generated erotic images of strangers without their consent. And this is something that was done at the rate of, in some cases at its peak, thousands of times an hour. Over 2 million images of this kind were created. The Center for Countering Digital Hate estimates that about 20,000 of those were of children. So this is clearly a red line that has been crossed, and especially in the European Union and beyond, there is some significant pushback now against these kind of actions.
Well, Quinn, do you expect that there will be a similar actions taken elsewhere as happened in Paris, and the fact that the problem with X is not just, of course, these were particularly egregious, the distribution of sexual deepfakes, as well as the Holocaust denial content, but there's a lot of other extremely damaging and injurious false information that circulates on these platforms.
Well, as you mentioned in the intro, there already has been a major fine levied against Musk in December by the European Commission about the use of the platform to mislead users. So the use of the blue check verification system, which suggests kind of sources of authority that are not, in fact, sources of authority, are used to juice the kind of political messages that Musk himself wants to get across, which are now absolutely indistinguishable from the most extreme political demands of the European far right, most notably the demand for the remigration, quote unquote, of non-white residents of Europe. Is something that until very recently was only ever heard on the extreme fringes. Even a party like the Alternative for Germany party wouldn't have used terms like that. And now it's frequently propagated and circulated by Musk in ways that, rightly enough now, even parties of the center right and the center left across Europe feel like has gone from free speech into the space of disinformation and foreign interference. So indeed, I do think that the question of liability now for the kind of actions that are produced as an outcome of speech circulated on X has entered into a new zone of regulation for Europe in a way that it hasn't before.
And Quinn, could you also talk about this, earlier this week, SpaceX acquiring XAI? This is the largest merger in history,
yeah,
which could potentially make Musk into a trillionaire.
Yeah, this is really extraordinary. The merger of xAI, which is his AI company, which is the parent company of x.com, into SpaceX produces this $1.5 trillion valued behemoth, the largest private company by far in the world. And the proportions inside of that company are worth thinking about. So X is only about 1-2% of the total value of the Musk empire. And yet we have a disproportionate sort of amount of attention that goes to it because I think it plays a disproportionately important role. It is the kind of mouthpiece. It's the platform. It's the place where Musk is able to deliver his ideology in the most unfiltered way. And it's the place where he does his best to kind of build consent for really what is the extreme far-right position that he's trying to construct a new social reality on the basis of. So the X story is a tiny one inside of the grand story of SpaceX. The grand story of SpaceX is one that, as of last Friday, includes, as alluded to at the top, a request filed with the FCC to launch, quote-unquote, up to 1 million satellites into orbit around the Earth. To put that in context, at present, Starlink, the satellite part of SpaceX, has a bit over 9,000 satellites, which is already 60% of the satellites in orbit. To raise that up to 1 million is nothing less than the most audacious land grab in human history, in this case, a land grab for space, with the idea that that will then become a layer, really encasing the Earth, of data centers, which will be able to, he hopes, catapult his so far lagging AI company past the competitors and provide universal broadband access for the Earth citizens below. So the scale of the ambitions is really, really breathtaking, in fact.
Quinn, before we go, though, I wanted to ask you about the connections between Musk and Epstein. With French prosecutors investigating X for potential complicity in the possession and distribution of child sexual abuse material, investigating with Europol, you also have this release of millions of pages of documents with Elon Musk mentioned a number of times. Can you talk about that and maybe make that connection?
Sure. Especially during the feud with Trump last year, Musk made a great deal of hay on his own distance from Epstein and his own kind of moral condemnation of him and used it as a way to kind of tar his rivals and his opponents in that moment. What we know now, based on the latest cache of documents, is that far from keeping arm's distance, he was actually in semi-regular contact with Epstein and made very clear plans to come and visit him on his island to party, as he put it in the emails. So the distance that was claimed to be there was actually nothing of this sort. And he's quite clearly as enmeshed in this toxic Epstein network as the very people he was criticizing.
Quinn Slobodian, we're going to talk to you much more about your book when it comes out in the next months, Muskism, A Guide for the Perplexed. Quinn Slobodian is professor of international history at Boston University. We thank you so much for being with us. On Monday, February 23rd, Democracy Now! Is celebrating our 30th anniversary at Riverside Church in New York. Nermeen and I, as well as Juan Gonzalez, who's flying in from Chicago, will be there with, hopefully, you. Guests will include Angela Davis, Naomi Klein, the Nobel Prize-winning Maria Ressa, the great Michael Stipe, and the jazz legend Wynton Marsalis, Masaba Butoh-Harare for the Riff Raff, and so many more. You can go to democracynow.org for more information and tickets. That's democracynow.org. I can't wait to see you there, Nermeen.
Me too.
And a very happy 15th birthday to one Arthur Alcoff. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh for another edition of Democracy Now!
This is Mac DeMarco, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby, the Chablis.
Looking for work that fits your schedule and can help make a difference in your community? Statistics Canada is hiring approximately 32,000 people across Canada for the 2026 census. Census jobs offer competitive pay, flexible hours, valuable experience, and the chance to help collect data that shape programs and services in your community. Apply today at census.gc.ca/jobs. A message from the Government of Canada.